and the mysteries of the dragon are an imposture, which celebrates religiously mysteries that are no mysteries at all, and observes with a spurious piety profane rites. What are these mystic chests? For I must expose their sacred things, and divulge things not fit for speech. Are they not sesame cakes, and pyramidal cakes, and globular and flat cakes, embossed all over, and lumps of salt, and a serpent the symbol of Dionysus Bassara? And besides these, are they not pomegranates, and branches, and rods, and ivy leaves, and besides, round cakes and poppy seeds, and further, there are the unmentionable symbols of Themis, marjoram, a lamp, a sword, a woman's comb, which is a euphemism, and mystic expression for the mulibrea. Foe unblushing shamelessness! Once on a time night was silent, a veil for the pleasure of temperate men, but now for the initiated, the holy night is the telltale of the rites of licentiousness, and the glare of torches reveals vicious indulgences. Quench the flame, O hierophant reverence, O torch-bearer, the torches, that light exposes Iacchus, let thy mysteries be honored, and command the orgies to be hidden in night and darkness. 2. The fire dissembles not, it exposes, and punishes what it is bidden. Such are the mysteries of the atheists. 3. And with reason I call those atheists who know not the true God, and pay shameless worship to a boy torn in pieces by the Titans, and a woman in distress, and to parts of the body that in truth cannot be mentioned for shame, held fast as they are in the double impiety, first in that they know not God, not acknowledging as God him who truly is the other, and second is the error of regarding those who exist not as existing and calling those gods that have no real existence, or rather no existence at all, who have nothing but name. Wherefore the apostle reproves us, saying, "And you were strangers to the covenants of promise, having no hope, and without God, in the world." 4. All honor to that king of the Scythians, whoever Anacharsis was, who shot with that arrow one of his subjects, who imitated among the Scythians the mystery of the mother of the gods, as practiced by the inhabitants of Cyzicus, beating a drum, and sounding a cymbal strung from his neck, like a priest of Cybele, condemning him, as having become effeminate among the Greeks, and a teacher of the disease of effeminacy, to the rest of the Kithians. Wherefore, for I must by no means conceal it, I cannot help wondering how Ahimeras of Agrigentum, and Nicanor of Cyprus, and Diagoras, and Hippo of Melos, and besides these, that Cyrenian, of the name of Theodorus, and numbers of others, who lived a sober life, and had a clearer insight, and the rest of the world into the prevailing error respecting those gods, were called atheists, for if they did not arrive at the knowledge of the truth, they certainly suspected the error of the common opinion, which suspicion is no insignificant seed, and becomes the germ of true wisdom. One of these charges the Egyptians thus: if you believe them to be gods, do not mourn, or bewail them, and if you mourn, and bewail them, do not any more regard them as gods. And another, taking an image of Hercules made of wood, for he happened most likely to be cooking something at home, said, "Come now, Hercules, now is the time to undergo for us this 13th labor, as you did the 12th for Eurystheus, and make this ready for Diagoras." And so cast it into the fire, as a log of wood. For the extremes of ignorance are atheism and superstition, from which we must endeavor to keep. And do you not see Moses, the hierophant of the truth, enjoining that no eunuch, or emasculated man, or son of a harlot, should enter the congregation? By the two first he alludes to the impious custom by which men were deprived both of divine energy, and of their virility, and by the third, to him, who, in place of the only real God, assumes many gods falsely so called, as the son of a harlot, in ignorance of his true father, may claim many putative fathers. There was an innate original communion between men and heaven, obscured through ignorance, but which now at length has leapt forth instantaneously from the darkness, and shines resplendent, as has been expressed by 1:1, in the following lines: "See, street thou this lofty, this boundless ether, holding the earth in the embrace of its humid arms. And in these, O thou, who makest the earth thy chariot, and in the earth hast thy seat, whoever thou be, baffling our efforts to behold thee. And whatever else the sons of the poets singular, but sentiments erroneous, and deviating from what is right, and certainly pernicious, have turned man, a creature of heavenly origin, away from the heavenly life, and stretched him on the earth, by inducing him to cleave to earthly objects, For some, beguiled by the contemplation of the heavens and trusting to their sight alone, while they looked on the motions of the stars, straightway were seized with admiration, and deified them, calling the stars gods from their motion Theos from Thein, and worshipped the sun, as, for example, the Indians, and the moon, as the Phrygians. Others, plucking the benignant fruits of earth-born plants, called grain Demeter, as the Athenians, and the vine Dionysus, as the Thebans. Others, considering the penalties of wickedness, deified them, worshipping various forms of retribution and calamity. Hence the Erinnyes, and the Eumenides, and the Pyacator deities, and the judges and avengers of crime, are the creations of the tragic poets. And some even of the philosophers, after the poets, make idols of forms of the affections in your breasts, such as fear, and love, and joy, and hope, as, to be sure, Epimenides, of old, who raised AR Athens the altars of insult and impudence. Other objects deified by men take their rise from events, and are fashioned in bodily shape, such as a dike, a clotho, and Lachesis, and Atropos, and Hymarmena, and Oxo, and Thallo, which are Attic goddesses. There is a sixth mode of introducing error, and of manufacturing gods, according to which they number the 12 gods, whose birth is the theme of which Hesiod sings in his Theogony, and of whom Homer speaks in all that he says of the gods. The last mode remains, for there are 7 in all that which takes its rise from the divine beneficence towards men. 4. Not understanding that it is God that does us good, they have invented saviors, in the persons of the Dioscuri, and Hercules the averter of evil, and Asclepius the healer. These are the slippery and hurtful deviations from the truth which draw man down from heaven, and cast him into the abyss. I wish to show thoroughly what like these gods of yours are, that now at length you may abandon your delusion, and speed your flight back to heaven. For we also were once children of wrath, even as others, but God, being rich in mercy, for the great love wherewith he loved us, when we were now dead in trespasses, quickened us together with Christ. 2. For the Word is living, and having been buried with Christ, is exalted with God. But those who are still unbelieving are called children of wrath, reared for wrath. We who have been rescued from error, and restored to the truth, are no longer the nurslings of wrath. Thus, therefore, we who were once the children of lawlessness, have through the philanthropy of the Word now become the sons of God. But to you a poet of your own, Empedocles of Agrigentum, comes, and says, "Wherefore, distracted with grievous evils, you will never ease your soul of its miserable woes. The most of what is told of your gods is fabled and invented, and those things which are supposed to have taken place are recorded of vile men, who lived licentious lives. Do you walk in pride and madness, and leaving the right and straight path, you have gone away through thorns and briars? Why do ye wander, seize, foolish men, from mortals leave the darkness of night, and lay hold on the light?" These counsels the Sibyl, who is at once prophetic and poetic, enjoins on us, and truth enjoins them on us too, stripping the crowd of deities of those terrifying and threatening masks of theirs, disproving the rash opinions formed of them by showing the similarity of names. For there are those who reckon 3 Jupiter's hymn of Aether in Arcadia, and the other 2 sons of Cronos, and of these, 1 in Crete, and the others again in Arcadia, and there are those that reckon 5 Athenes the Athenian, the daughter of Hephaestus the second, the Egyptian, the daughter of Neleus the third, the inventor of war, the daughter of Cronos the fourth, the daughter of Zeus, whom the Mycenaeans have named Coryphagia, from her mother. Above all, the daughter of Pallas and Tithonus, the daughter of Oceanus, who, having wickedly killed her father, adorned herself with her father's skin, as if it had been the fleece of a sheep. Further, Aristotle calls the first Apollo, the son of Hephaestus and Athene. Consequently, Athene is no more a virgin the second, that in Crete, the son of Corybus the third, the son Zeus the fourth, the Arcadian, the son of Silenus. This one is called by the Arcadians Nomeus, and in addition to these, he specifies the Libyan Apollo, the son of Ammon, and to these Didymus the grammarian adds a sixth, the son of Magnus. And now how many Apollos are there? They are numberless, mortal men, all helpers of their fellow men, who similarly with those already mentioned have been so called. And what were I to mention the many Asclepiuses, or all the Mercuries, that are reckoned up, or the Vulcans of fable? Shall I not appear extravagant, deluging your ears with these numerous names? At any rate, the native countries of your gods, and their arts, and lives, and besides especially their sepulchres, demonstrate them to have been men. Mars, accordingly, who by the poets is held in the highest possible honor. Mars, bane of men, bloodstained stormer of walls, 1. This deity, always changing sides, and implacable, as Epicharmus says, was a Spartan. Sophocles knew him for a Thracian, others say he was an Arcadian. This god, Homer says, was bound 13 months. Mars had his suffering by Aloeus' sons, Otus and Aphiautus, strongly bound, he 13 months in brazen fetters lay. 2. Good luck attend the Carians, who sacrifice dogs to him, and may the Scythians never leave off sacrificing asses, as Apollodorus and Callimachus relate. Phoebus rises propitious to the Hyperboreans, then they offer sacrifices of asses to him. And the same in another place. Fat sacrifices of asses flesh delight Phoebus. Hephaestus, whom Jupiter cast from Olympus, from its divine threshold, having fallen on Lemnos, practiced the art of working in brass, maimed in his feet. His tottering knees were bowed beneath his weight. 3. You have also a doctor, and not only a brass worker, among the gods, and the doctor was greedy of gold, as Asclepius was his name. I shall produce, as a witness your own poet, the Boeotian Pindar. Him even the gold glittering in his hands, amounting to a splendid fee, persuaded to rescue a man, already death's capture, from his grasp, but Saturnian Jove, having shot his bolt through both, quickly took the breath from their breasts, and his flaming thunderbolt sealed their doom. And Euripides? For Zeus was guilty of the murder of my son Asclepius, by casting the lightning flame at his breast. He therefore lies struck with lightning in the regions of Cynosurus. Philochorus also says that Poseidon was worshipped as a physician in Danaus, and that Cronos settled in Sicily, and there was buried Patroclus the Thurian, and Sophocles the Younger, in three tragedies, have told the story of the Dioscuri, and these Dioscuri were only two mortals, if Homer is worthy of credit. But they beneath the teeming earth, in Lacedaemon lay, their native land. 4. And, in addition, he who wrote the Cyprian poem says Castor was mortal, and death was decreed to him by fate, but Pollux was immortal, being the progeny of Mars. This he has poetically fabled, but Homer is more worthy of credit, who spoke as above of both the Dioscuri, and, besides, proved Eurycles to be a mere phantom. The man Hercules, expert in mighty deeds. Hercules, therefore, was known by Homer himself as only a mortal man, and Hieronymus the philosopher describes the make of his body as tall, 5, bristling-haired, robust, and Dicearchus says that he was square-built, muscular, dark, hook-nosed, with grayish eyes, and long hair. This Hercules, accordingly, after living 52 years, came to his end, and was burned at a funeral by Rhinota. As for the Muses, whom Alcander calls the daughters of Zeus and Mnemosyne, and the rest of the poets and authors deify and worship those Muses, in honor of whom whole states have already erected museums, being handmaids, were hired by Megaclo, the daughter of Macar. This Macar reigned over the Lesbians, and was always quarreling with his wife, and Megaclo was vexed for her mother's sake. What would she not do on her account? Accordingly she hires those handmaids, being so many in number, and calls them Mesi, according to the dialect of the Aeolians. These she taught to sing deeds of the olden time, and play melodiously on the lyre. And they, by assiduously playing the lyre, and singing sweetly to it, soothed Macar, and put a stop to his ill temper. Wherefore Megaclo, as a token of gratitude to them, on her mother's account erected brazen pillars, and ordered them to be held in honor in all the temples. Such, then, are the Muses. This account is in Myrsila of Lesbos. And now, then, hear the loves of your gods, and the incredible tales of their licentiousness, and their wounds, and their bonds, and their laughings, and their fights, their servitudes too, and their banquets, and furthermore, their embraces, and tears, and sufferings, and lewd delights. Call me Poseidon, and the troop of damsels deflowered by him, Amphitrite, Amymone, Alope, Melanip, Alcyone, Hippotho, Chion, and myriads of others with whom, though so many, the passions of your Poseidon were not satiated. Call me Apollo, this is Phoebus, both a holy prophet and a good adviser. But Stirope will not say that, nor Eteousa, nor Arsino, nor Zeuxip, nor Protho, nor Marpessa, nor Hypsipyle, for Daphne alone escaped the prophet and seduction. And, above all, let the father of gods and men, according to you, himself come, who was so given to sexual pleasure as to lust after all, and indulge his lust on all, like the goats of the Muetae. and thy poems, O Homer, fill me with admiration. He said, and nodded with his shadowy brows waved, on the immortal head the ambrosial locks, and all Olympus trembled at his nod. 1. Thou makest Zeus venerable, O Homer, and the nod which thou dost ascribe to him is most reverend, but show him only a woman's girdle, and Zeus is exposed, and his locks are dishonored. To what a pitch of licentiousness did that Zeus, of yours proceed, who spent so many nights in voluptuousness with Alcmene? For not even these 9 nights were long to this insatiable monster, but, on the contrary, a whole lifetime were short enough for his lust, that he might beget for us the evil-averting god. Hercules, the son of Zeus, a true son of Zeus, was the offspring of that long night, who with hard toil accomplished the 12 labors, in long time, but in one night deflowered the 50 daughters of Thestius, and thus was at once the debaucher and the bridegroom of so many virgins. It is not, then, without reason, that the poets call him a cruel wretch, and a nefarious scoundrel. It were tedious to recount his adulteries of all sorts, and debauching of boys, for your gods did not even abstain from boys, one having loved Hylas, another Hyacinthus, another Pelops, another Chrysippus, and another Ganymede. Let such gods as these be worshipped by your wives, and let them pray that their husbands be such as these, so temperate that, emulating them in the same practices, they may be like the gods. Such gods let your boys be trained to worship, that they may grow up to be men with the accursed likeness of fornication on them received from the gods. But it is only the male deities, perhaps, that are impetuous in sexual indulgence. The female deities stayed each in the house for shame. 2. Says Homer, the goddess is blushing, for modesty's sake, to look on Aphrodite when she had been guilty of adultery. But these are more passionately licentious, bound in the chains of adultery, Eos having disgraced herself with Tithonus, Selene with Endymion, Nereus with Iacchus, Thetis with Peleus, Demeter with Jason, Persephone with Adonis, and Aphrodite having disgraced herself with Ares, crossed over to Kinnera, and married Anchises, and laid snares for Phaethon, and loved Adonis. She contended with the ox-eyed Juno, and the goddesses enrobed for the sick of the apple, and presented themselves naked before the shepherd, that he might decide which was the fairest. But come, let us briefly go the round of the games, and do away with those solemn assemblages at tombs, the Isthmian, Nemean, and Pythian, and finally the Olympian. At Pytho the Pythian dragon is worshipped, and the festival assemblage of the serpent is called by the name Pythia. At the Isthmus the sea spit out a piece of miserable refuse, and the Isthmian games bewail male Charidoc. At Nemea another little boy, or Chamorus, was buried, and the funeral games of the child are called Nemea. Pisa is the grave of the Phrygian charioteer, O Hellenes, of all tribes, and the Olympian games, which are nothing else than the funeral sacrifices of Pelops, the Zeus of Phidias claims for himself. The mysteries were then, as is probable, games held in honor of the dead, so also were the oracles, and both became public, but the mysteries at Agra 3 and in Olympus of Attica were confined to Athens, but those contests and phalloi consecrated to Dionysus were a world's shame, pervading life with their deadly influence, for Dionysus, eagerly desiring to descend to Hades, did not know the way a man, by name Prosimnus, offers to tell him, not without reward. The reward was a disgraceful one, though not so in the opinion of Dionysus. It was an aphrodisian favor that was asked of Dionysus. As a reward, the god was not reluctant to grant the request made to him, and promises to fulfill it should he return, and confirms his promise with an oath. Having learned the way, he departed, and again returned. He did not find Prosimnus, for he had died. In order to acquit himself of his promise to his lover, he rushes to his tomb, and burns, with unnatural lust. Cutting a fig branch that came to his hand, he shaped the phallus, and so performed his promise to the dead man. As a mystic memorial of this incident, phalloi are raised aloft in honor of Dionysus, through the various cities. For did they not make a procession in honor of Dionysus, and sing most shameless songs in honor of the pudenda, all would go wrong, says Heraclitus. This is that Pluto and Dionysus, in whose honor they give themselves up to frenzy, and play the bacchanal, not so much, in my opinion, for the sick of intoxication, as for the sick of the shameless ceremonial practiced. With reason, therefore, such as have become slaves of their passions are your gods. Furthermore, like the Helots among the Lacedaemonians, Apollo came under the yoke of slavery to Admetus in Pherae, Hercules to Omphale in Sardis, Poseidon was a drudge to Laomedon, and so was Apollo, who, like a good-for-nothing servant, was unable to obtain his freedom from his former master, and at that time the walls of Troy were built by them for the Phrygian, and Homer is not ashamed to speak of Athene as appearing to Ulysses with a golden lamp in her hand, and we read of Aphrodite, like a wanton serving wench, taking and setting a seat for Helen opposite the adulterer in order to entice him. Panyasis, too, tells us of gods in plenty besides those who acted as servants, writing thus: Demeter underwent servitude, and so did the famous lame god Poseidon underwent it, and Apollo too, of the silver bow, with a mortal man for a year, and fierce Mars underwent it at the compulsion of his father. And so on. Agreeably to this, it remains for me to bring before you those amatory and sensuous deities of yours, as in every respect having human feelings. For theirs was a mortal body. This Homer most distinctly shows, by introducing Aphrodite uttering loud and shrill cries on account of her wound, and describing the most warlike Ares himself as wounded in the stomach by Diomede. Polemo, too, says that Athene was wounded by Arnitusnik. Homer says that Pluto even was struck with an arrow by Hercules, and Panyasis relates that the beams of Sol were struck by the arrows of Hercules. One and the same Panyasis relates that by the same Hercules arrow the goddess of marriage was wounded in sandy Pelos. So Cebes, too, relates that Hercules was wounded in the hand by the sons of Hippocoon, and if there are wounds, there is blood. For the ichor of the poets is more repulsive than blood, for the putrefaction of blood is called ichor, wherefore cures and means of sustenance of which they stand in need must be furnished. Accordingly mention is made of tables, and potations, and laughter, and intercourse, for men would not devote themselves to love, or beget children, or sleep, if they were immortal, and had no wants, and never grew old. Jupiter himself, when the guest of Lycaon the Arcadian, partook of a human table among the Ethiopians, a table rather inhuman and forbidden, for he satiated himself with human flesh unwittingly, for the god did not know that Lycaon the Arcadian, his entertainer, had slain his son, his name was Nectimus, and served him up cooked before Zeus. This is Jupiter the good, the prophetic, the patron of hospitality, the protector of suppliants, the benign, the author of omens, the avenger of wrongs rather the unjust, the violator of right and of law, the impious, the inhuman, the violent, the seducer, the adulterer, the amatory. But perhaps when he was such he was a man, but now these fables seem to have grown old on our hands. Zeus is no longer a serpent, a swan, nor an eagle, nor a licentious man. The god no longer flies, nor loves boys, nor kisses, nor offers violence, although there are still many beautiful women, more comely, and Leda, more blooming than Semele, and boys of better looks and manners than the Phrygian herdsman. Where is now that eagle? Where now that swan? Where now is Zeus himself? He has grown old with his feathers, for as yet he does not repent of his amatory exploits, nor is he taught continence. The fable is exposed before you. Leda is dead, the swan is dead. Seek your Jupiter, ransack not heaven, but earth. The Cretan, in whose country he was buried, will show him to you, I mean Callimachus, in his hymns. For thy tomb, O king, the Cretans fashioned. For Zeus is dead, be not distressed, as Leda is dead, and the swan, and the eagle, and the libertine, and the serpent, and now even the superstitious seem, although reluctantly, yet truly, to have come to understand their error respecting the gods. For not from an ancient oak, nor from a rock, but from men, is that ascent. 2. But shortly after this, they will be found to be but oak sandstones. One Agamemnon is said by Staphylus to be worshipped, as a Jupiter in Sparta, and Phanicles, in his book of the Brave and Fair, relates that Agamemnon, king of the Hellenes, erected the temple of Argenian Aphrodite, in honor of Argenis, his friend, and Artemis, named the Strangled, is worshipped by the Arcadians, as Callimachus says in his book of Causes, and at Methymna another Artemis had divine honors paid her, viz. Artemis Condylitis. There is also the temple of another Artemis, Artemis Podagra, or the Gaudon Lakonikok, as Sosibius says. Polemo tells of an image of a yawning Apollo, and again of another image, reverenced in Elis, of the guzzling Apollo, then the Aelian sacrifice to Zeus, the averter of flies, and the Roman sacrifice to Hercules, the averter of flies and to fever, and to terror, whom also they reckon among the attendants of Hercules. I pass over the Argives, who worshipped Aphrodite, opener of graves. The Argives and Spartans reverence Artemis Chilitis, or the coffer, from Chelutane, which in their speech signifies to cough. Do you imagine from what source these details have been quoted? Only such as are furnished by yourselves are he reduced, and you do not seem to recognize your own writers, whom I call as witnesses against your unbelief. Poor wretches that ye are, who have filled with unholy jesting the whole compass of your life, a life in reality devoid of life. Is not Zeus the bald head worshipped in Argos, and another Zeus, the Avenger, in Cyprus? Do not the Argives sacrifice to Aphrodite Parabasa the protectress, one, and the Athenians to Aphrodite Hetsera the courtesan, and the Syracusans to Aphrodite Callipygus, whom Nicander has somewhere called Caliglutos, with beautiful rump? I pass over in silence just now Dionysus' Choirip sails. 2. The Sicyonians reverence this deity, whom they have constituted the god of the Melibra, the patron of filthiness, and religiously honor as the author of licentiousness. Such, then, are their gods. Such are they also who make mockery of the gods, or rather mock and insult themselves. How much better are the Egyptians, who in their towns and villages pay divine honors to the irrational creatures, and the Greeks, who worship such gods as these? For if they are beasts, they are not adulterous or libidinous, and seek pleasure in nothing that is contrary to nature. And of what sort these deities are, what need is there further to say, as they have been already sufficiently exposed? Furthermore, the Egyptians whom I have now mentioned are divided in their objects of worship. The Sinaites worship the brazefish, and the Maiotes the cis, and other fishes worshipped by those who inhabit Elephantine. The Oxyrrhynchites likewise worship a fish which takes its name from their country. Again, the Heraclitopolites worship the Ichneumon, the inhabitants of Sais, and of Thebes a sheep, the Leucopolites a wolf, the Kinopolites a dog, the Memphites apis, the Mendesians a goat. And you, who are altogether better than the Egyptians, I shrink from saying worse, who never cease laughing every day of your lives at the Egyptians, what are some of you, too, with regard to brute beasts? For of your number the Thessalians pay divine homage to storks, in accordance with ancient custom, and the Thebans to weasels, for their assistance at the birth of Hercules. And again, are not the Thessalians reported to worship ants, since they have learned that Zeus, in the likeness of an ant, had intercourse with Eurymedusa, the daughter of Cleter, and begot Myrmidon? Polemo, too, relates that the people who inhabit the Troad worship the mice of the country, which they call Smintwa, because they gnawed the strings of their enemies' bows, and from those mice Apollo has received his epithet of Smintian. Heraclides, in his work regarding the building of temples in Nicarnania, says that, at the place where the promontory of Actium is, and the temple of Apollo of Actium, they offer to the flies the sacrifice of an ox. Nor shall I forget the Samians. The Samians, as Euphorion says, reverence the sheep. Nor shall I forget the Syrians, who inhabit Phoenicia, of whom some revered doves, and others fishes, with as excessive veneration as the aliens do Zeus. Well, then, since those you worship are not gods, it seems to me requisite to ascertain if those are really demons, who are ranked, as you say, in the second order next the gods. For if the licorice and impure are demons, indigenous demons, who have obtained sacred honors, may be discovered in crowds throughout your cities. Menedemus, among the Kitnidons, among the Tenians, Callistagoras, among the Delians, Phineas, among the Laconians, Astrobacchus at Phalaris, a hero affixed to the prow of ships is worshipped, and the Pythian priestess enjoined the Plutians to sacrifice to Androcrates and Democritus, and Cecleus and Leuco, while the Median War was at its height. Other demons in plenty may be brought to light by anyone who can look about him a little. For thrice 10,000 are there in the all-nourishing earth of demons immortal, the guardians of articulate speaking men. 3. Who these guardians are, do not grudge, O Boeotian, to tell. Is it not clear that they are those we have mentioned, and those of more renown, the great demons, Apollo, Artemis, Leto, Demeter, Caor, Pluto, Hercules, and Zeus himself? But it is from running away that they guard us, O Ascrian, or perhaps it is from sinning, as forsooth they have never tried their hand at sin themselves. In that case fairly the proverb may fitly be uttered: the father who took no admonition admonishes his son. If these are our guardians, it is not because they have any ardor of kindly feeling towards us, but intent on your ruin. After the manner of flatterers, they prey on your substance, enticed by the smoke. These demons themselves indeed confess their own gluttony, saying, for with drink offerings due, and fat of lambs, my altar still hath at their hands been fed. Such honor hath to us been ever paid. 1. What other speech would they utter, if indeed the gods of the Egyptians, such as cats and weasels, should receive the faculty of speech, and that Homeric and poetic one which proclaims their liking for savory odors and cookery. Such are your demons and gods, and demigods, if there are any so called, as there are demiasses mules, for you have no want of terms to make up compound names of impiety.